I need to change my marketing. Clearly, I'm often described as the bureaucrat. I'm proud to be a bureaucrat. Of course, it's the country needs some, but maybe not quite as many as we had before. Anyway, as you said, we try and do good things to enable even better things to happen in locality, so that we can have celebration days like today. And I am delighted to be here in Newquay on Europe Day. I've heard great things about the previous award ceremonies, and I'm pleased to see that we're in these times of austerity wasting no money on providing sunshine, because that would have been inappropriate. So my job is slightly scary. And I try not to think about it very often, because I'm responsible for £2.5 billion worth of spend for the ESF programme in England, advising ministers on policy, representing the UK at various kind of European meetings, and trying to make sure nothing goes wrong, which is not easy. But despite the fact that it's slightly scary, I was delighted to take up the role in October when we had a bit of a reshuffle at DWP, because actually, as we're going to hear today, ESF, despite the fact that so many of my conversations are about duller things, is all about people, changing people's lives through getting the right support in the right place at the right time, helping them gain new skills, move into work, and helping the workforce to upskill and make business more competitive. And that's why, for me personally, being at events like this is great to hear firsthand about the achievements that ESF investment can enable, because actually most of my time is spent worrying about the latest audit or worrying about the plunging value of the euro. Great for going on holiday, not so great when you've given all your money out in pounds and now you can't claim it all back from the commission. And then also lots of discussions about dull technicalities, on which you've got 10 minutes of that, I'm pleased to say. Because this speech might be a bit of a change of pace, and I can't decide whether to make no apologies for that or a small apology. But as someone who kind of tends to cry at the backstories of people on Britain's Got Talent and X Factor, it's just as well that my speech is a little drier than that. So I'm starting just to talk about the existing programme, because there are a number of things which are unique about the way ESF works in Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. First of all, you've got ring-fenced investment and separate priorities, which make you you were special, of course, but it means you are special and visible both nationally and across the EU. And that distinctiveness has helped you influence how the money's spent, influencing DWP, for example, to ensure that its particular arrangements are tailored to local needs. And as we've already heard, Cornwall Works is a great example of really good partnership working to really get stuff motoring for Cornwall. And it's right now adding value in the families provision, where Cornwall Council and Job Centre Plus have been leading that engagement to try and make that difficult, but absolutely, I think, the right thing to be doing with a programme like ESF, but trying to get that working early on. And the split of this programme in Cornwall between the employment objectives and the skills objectives is kind of the reverse to the rest of England. So you concentrate much more on the skills area, reflecting your particular needs, the needs to drive up productivity and support higher value jobs. And I think you're unique in England in having a kind of higher education element delivered by the combined universities Cornwall partners. And in the first half of the Convergence programme, over 450 people have participated in postgraduate training, 219 already completed a level 5 qualification. And this type of activity doesn't happen elsewhere. In priority 4, which is all about employment, I think, the co-financing performance has outstripped what we thought it would. So 41% of participants have gone into work, almost 4,000 people. Well outperforming the target of 25%. And the way the programme has been communicated and publicised and delivered is a shining example to all, as exemplified in today's event. And you've also been very good at joining up with other programmes. There's a big push in our new programming period to join up ESF with other funds to make sure that together they add more value. And you've already got great experience of doing that, joining with the European Regional Development Fund in particular. So 15 Cornwall, the Eden Project, Resource, and the Newquay Airport School for Entrepreneurs, and the CUC itself are all good examples of funds being used jointly to greater effect. So that's the current programme. Still, although I spend most of my time thinking about the new programme starting in 2014, there's still about half of the money left to spend in the existing programme, and there are plenty of opportunities to continue to make a real difference. I've mentioned the families provision already, worth about £13 million. And the Skills Funding Agency are still investing in workforce skills, support for NEETs, and skills for people who are unemployed or at risk of redundancy. And to date, we think we've had over 100,000 starts, so there's a great impact there, and much more be able to do in the second half of the programme. And similarly, the HE programme will build on the success of the first 3 years and continue to drive higher-level skills in Cornwall. And as I said, all of these investments are about people, so I've been given a little example of someone called Sean Shipley, who graduated from 15 Cornwall in April this year. He was unemployed, without any goals for the future, and he said, "I knew I needed to change. There was too much alcohol, anger and frustration in my life. I wanted some stability and direction, to find a passion for something positive, and 15 Cornwall has given me all of those things. My family and friends can see the difference. They're proud that I'm achieving so much. I persuaded a friend to apply too, because I really believe it will turn his life around." And Sean's now working at Paul Ainsworth, famous number 6 restaurant in Padstone. Padstein, I believe it's called, isn't it? Anyway, that one not owned by him, Rick. And so clearly ESF investment continues to change lives. And I hope the new programme will find ways to continue to do that. As I said, we're starting to prepare for that. The European Commission has published various fascinating documents, as you might imagine. And they're proposing, and I recommended reading for you all, they're proposing, there's a European strategy called European 2020. And actually, in summary, the four priorities that they're focusing on for the structural funds make eminent sense and feel very familiar. So promoting employment and labour mobility, investing in education, skills and lifelong learning, promoting social inclusion and combating poverty, and then largely but not exclusively for the Eastern European countries, enhancing institutional capacity and efficient public administration. So we've been giving some thought about what that might mean for the programmes as a whole in the UK, and particularly for ESF in England. And our initial thinking, perhaps unsurprisingly from the DWP's perspective, is that we think ESF can add real value by focusing on supporting the fairly recently published social justice strategy, which is a cross-government strategy trying to make a difference in those areas where we have historically failed. So particularly focusing on the most disadvantaged groups, those who are either not eligible for or haven't been well served by existing mainstream provision. So young people not in employment, education or training, for example. Troubled families, ex-offenders, people without skills. But we also, elsewhere in government, think that there's more we can do to support self-employment and entrepreneurship, to upskill employees, particularly in SMEs, and really use ESF to help drive growth as well as support the most disadvantaged. One of the challenges for me is to find a way so that ESF can really add value and be distinctive, which is a bit of a challenge in the context of a country that invests massively of its own money in both skills and employment support. There will be times when we need simply to use ESF to provide more of our mainstream provision, but actually I'd rather we were doing something different and more interesting and more innovative. We've been consulting on how those funds should be used and be delivered. And we'll be the government will be publishing a response to that consultation later in July. Delivery issues are the ones that people bend my ear about most. I'm told mostly people in Cornwall are because you, through things like Cornwall Works, have found a way to make it work, you're not as angry as the crowds are usually addressed. which is a relief, really. But I still maintain that there are a lot of advantages to the ways ESF is currently delivered. So it does ensure coherence with national policy priorities. It does ensure that we are supportive to rather than competing with programmes like the Work Programme. We're able to identify match funding, which is a big issue for programmes like ESF. By and large, we deliver very efficiently. We deliver good outcomes and, by and large, sound financial management. But as I say, usually when I'm in large groups of local people, they tell me it doesn't work for them. And so I think there's a real challenge for trying to make sure that despite some of those national frameworks, some of that need to support national policy priorities, you can still make sure that the provision does meet local needs and is in some sense owned locally. And as others have said, I think Carolyn on the film, how do we make sure that those big arrangements that we have in place for ESF delivery and our procurement process enable social enterprises, for example, to be involved and to add the value they can without being shut out by Byzantine processes. We are a long way off decisions on the shape of the programme. I vacillate between waking up at 3 in the morning in a cold sweat about how much there is to do and thinking, oh, it don't matter, I'll always be moving faster than Brussels. And because of this fantastic, and I'm tempted to actually adopt this as my mantra in work, the Brussels mantra is nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, which means iteration and words like that and kind of making progress are not things that we are actually able to do. So final decisions about the shape of the regulations, exactly what we'll be required to do, what we'll be able to do, won't be clear until sometime in 2013, and hanging there is probably one of the most difficult budget negotiations that we've seen in for a number of years, because as has been played out in this country, there is a genuine debate to be had about whether the right thing to do when you have no money is to spend more, or whether the right thing to do when you have no money is to spend less, and it's clearly difficult. The UK's formal position on the budget is we should focus more of the money on the poorest countries and regions, which is very magnanimous of us, since we are a net contributor. But we'll see how that plays out and which negotiations we win and lose. So there is quite a long way to go, but even so, it does feel like the next few months are quite important for shaping that future programme. So anyone really who's interested, but certainly those who've got experience of delivery at whatever level, now's the chance to be kind of lobbying me, sending me wise thoughts about how you think it could be done differently and better next time, obviously particularly in mind of Cornwall's labour market challenges. And it, particularly given that Cornwall's likely to be the lowest category of region, again, less, we're renaming it, but it's less developed next time. So there'll be more money available in Cornwall, we think, and therefore we need to think about how to make best use of that. So I'm interested, as ever, bring me solutions, not problems. It's fascinating to hear what's not working well now, but what I want to hear about is what is working well now and what could work better in the future. What challenges and gaps do you have that you really think ESF is really well suited to drive up? And Mark Williams has already, from the Council, has already taken the challenge and handed me an 8-page paper in, I think it's six font, I think. So, but it's just as well I have a 5-hour journey back today, so I'll be reading that with a magnifying glass. But he's already taken that mantle and thought hard about how things can be improved next time. I'm always interested, right now in particular, because I have no strong steers from my ministers, I'm genuinely interested in all ideas about how to make this better. So that's pretty much it for me before I move on to the reason why I was invited and hand out a couple of awards. But I've been asked just to say a couple of thank yous to Andrew and Bev and other colleagues who've helped organise the event. And I'm sure, as ever, I detect Mark Yeoman's hand behind many things. including handing me the script I'll shortly be reading. So thank you for that. It would have been a stranger award ceremony if I didn't know who the people were or what they've done. Many thanks to everyone in the room, people who've been helped by ESF, people who've made the real difference to individuals on the ground, for your dedication and commitment in delivering learning and back-to-work support. And thank you for anyone in the room who spent the time to nominate the award winners to make this such an inspiring and interesting way to spend the morning.